Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, I'm Georgie Courage-Cole and welcome to today's Sherlock's in Conversation podcast. Today, I am joined by two women from the world of finance to talk about investing, where to start, what you need to know, and the common pitfalls to avoid. Emily Bellett is an established financial journalist and the owner of VestPod, a platform designed to educate and empower women to help them make the most of their money. She's also the author of Amazon bestseller, You're Not Broke, You're Pre-Rich, and host of the Wallet podcast. Following a career in private equity, she launched VestPod, a digital platform with a popular newsletter, workshops, events, and well-being programs. Meanwhile, Claire Francis is a director of savings and investments at Barclays with a background in financial journalism, where she wrote for The Times, The Independent on Sunday, and latterly, The Sunday Times. Welcome, both of you. Wow, that's quite impressive. I love reading bios like that about women. I'm always like, girl power. And God, we're in 2022, rightly so. But I mean, my husband did a talk the other day at one of my children's schools about money, and he was saying to me, oh God, how do I start? What shall I ask first? And I was like, ask them what money is, because it's power and independence and freedom and choice. And he was like, yeah, God, why didn't I think of that? But I mean, you'd agree with that, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's understanding what you can do with money and how you use money to have a better life, I suppose. And I've got a 7-year-old son, so I'm sort of trying to tell him that when he's like, mummy, why do you have to go to work? I don't want you to. And it's trying to explain what the reason I work is, because that enables us to live in the house we have and buy him clothes, feed us, be able to go on holiday, to do nice things. And if I didn't work, we wouldn't be able to do that. And it's trying to sort of get children to sort of understand that concept and grasp it from an early age. And then hopefully, as you then go through life, and as Emily will, I'm sure, sort of talk about as well, how we help to continue that education to empower people to get their money working as hard as possible for them for their futures.
It's so interesting. I said to my daughter, my 11-year-old, who's off school today, she's not very well, she said, what was I doing today? And I said, we were having this conversation. And I said, it's about investing. And I say, you know, it's like Daddy always says to you, you can spend that £10 now, or you could spend six and you could save four. And the next amount of time, that four might be worth 60, you know, which is the better route. And we always have those conversations at home, just trying to get them to think about it. They just did a young enterprise exercise. And she said, we've made £166 in phone chains. And I was like, and what's your profit? She's like, what? And I was like, well, I think I bought all the beads. How much time is it taking? But it's just trying to set those habits from a young age. And I think, yeah, education system doesn't quite do that. Emily, how do you feel about money and its role and what it means?
Yeah, I think money is, yeah, definitely freedom. We talk about it. And that's, you know, a question that I often, you know, ask the VestPod community, what does money mean to you? And often we never really think about it. We think about money as, you know, we need more money. We want to buy these things. But it's actually trying to link money and purpose. Like, you know, especially for women, what are the choices, you know, you want to make in life? What do you want to achieve? You will need money to do all these things. So I think thinking about your relationship with money, what is money for you? And growing up, we had all these messages around money, sometimes positive, sometimes quite negative. We may think money is quite scarce or money is quite abundant. But because we never had this formal financial education,
I know, it's mad, isn't
where
it?
Do I start? And even, you know, budgeting is not going to work for everyone. Or, you know, we don't know how much money should we save? Should we invest money? Should I put money into my pension? And because we don't necessarily have access to financial advisors, you really don't know where to start. So you have to do this work of educating yourself. It takes time, it takes energy, you have to find the relevant sources of information. So it's not that straightforward to get started, but in the end, it's not rocket science either. So it's just taking the time, maybe finding accountability partners, having these conversations. I think for me, it's really the first step, thinking about money in a different way, presenting money, you know, in a different way, because we've seen money from, you know, coming from the banks. But how, you know, can we change these conversations and ideas, and how do we see money in the world of finance, which can be very intimidating?
Yeah.
But we all handle money on a daily basis. We make these financial decisions. We're already empowered to do it. So it's how we can do it a bit better, maybe, to secure our future.
Quite. And when I whinge at my husband, when he's like, I'm taking this much out of your... We have a joint account, whether or not that's a good idea. I'd be interested to know what you both think. Maybe we'll come on to that. But and I sort of see when my salary comes in, X amount gets whisked away. And he's like, do you want to be going on a cruise when you're 65 or not? And I'm like, all right, I'll stay out of it. But can we talk a bit about women and your feelings around investing, in particular when it comes to women? I mean, I think we were saying earlier that it's proven that whilst female entrepreneurs struggle to raise money versus men, when they do, they actually drive a better ROI because they're more cautious and perhaps more organic and less risk averse. But yeah, as a sex, we are known to be less keen on investing, right? Can you elaborate on that? And I mean, that's sort of one of the reasons of today is answering a load of questions we've asked Sherlock's readers, but also really just getting women to think about it and realise that they need to take control and that it doesn't need to be risky or too risky.
Well, I think investing in general, people aren't putting enough money, men and women, they're not putting enough money away for the longer term. And that's a problem. It's often, you might have heard it referred to as the UK savings gap or retirement or pensions gap. So it's really important that we do everything we can to try and help people sort of understand and overcome perhaps some of the obstacles and barriers that put them off. But whilst it's a general problem, it's even more acute for women. So women at retirement, the value of their pension pots is on average significantly lower than men. And there are a number of factors for this, and Emily will know as well. But you know, things like often women do still tend to take career breaks, to take time out, to have children. That can hold them back in career progression, which is one of the reasons why often women are earning less and men. So there are lots of factors sort of that economically can help explain to a certain degree, but also even amongst women who are in the position where they could be investing, they are still less likely to do so than men, and they're more likely to remain in cash and keep all of their money in cash savings. So that's one of the things that we spend a lot of time, me and my job, I spend a lot of time trying to understand why that is and what can we do to help women. And obviously it's the reason why Emily, one of the reasons why Emily set up Vestpod. So how can we help overcome some of those barriers, overcome some of those obstacles? You touched on it there in terms of sort of often women being risk averse. And I think that is one of the things that people do worry about, because when it comes to investing, you know, stock markets can fall as well as rise. And I think there's a sort of a fear factor amongst lots of people that if they invest, there's a chance they could lose all their money. Mm. But that's not necessarily the case. Investing can be very high risk, but there are also ways to reduce and manage the risk so that it's a level you're comfortable with. And everybody's different. So as Emily said, spending the time just to understand a little bit and understand a little bit about yourself and what you're comfortable with as an individual can really sort of help. And another thing that women research shows about women is often we tend to feel that we need to know everything before we get started. And it's the same, you know, it's not just investing that accounts to. I think in a lot of, if you think about research that goes into sort of planning a family holiday or, you know, looking at a new kitchen, often a lot of women will spend hours and hours doing all their research before they make that decision. And that sort of feeling that you need to know it all.
Fully understand every single.
Yeah, but you don't. You know, I've been investing for over 15 years. I certainly don't understand it all, but it doesn't have to stop you getting started. And as you go, you know, as you do invest and it becomes more familiar to you, your knowledge increases and you get more comfortable. And we also see that over time, often people, you know, women who start out quite cautiously will feel more comfortable over time taking on a bit more risk.
Yeah, with their investments. It's starting to to understand the language. What would you say about women in particular?
Yeah, I think... Yeah.
And is Best Pod purely aimed at women?
So it was set up for women initially because that was, you know,
very great
close,
name,
close to my heart to thank you to educate women and looking at the gender pay gap, the investment gap, the wealth gap. It was like we need to bridge the gap. But I think men have to be part of the conversation because, you know, there's ways they can help women. We have to open up this conversation. And then how can we do better for ourselves? So we talk about education, learning bit by bit. But I think the most important thing is getting started. And there's a lot of ways, and we're going to talk about how to get started investing. And you can sort of automate your investment even before you know everything about how it works. On a very, very small scale, you can start just investing a few pounds today. So it doesn't need to be this huge amount of money. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions around investing. We think we need X amount of money.
Yeah.
We need that people know everything about it, that you need to be, there's some secrets.
You need this disposable income. And frankly, yeah, life gets more expensive, so... If that's how you are, you never start.
And you'll never start. And of course, it's. I think there's also. I mean, when what we've seen during the pandemic is a lot of new investors actually, you know, starting to invest and put money on the stock market because they were maybe bored. Maybe they are more disposable income because they didn't have to, you know, travel and so. There was this appeal of the stock market. The stock market has been going up for a little while, so people were like, "Yeah, I can make money quite easily," and people were taking a lot more risk than necessary. So you see all these headlines about the stock market. And of course, now you've seen for the past few weeks that the stock market start to go down. In the US, they've said that, you know, we're entering a bear market. So, you know, stock market again going down. So that can be quite scary. But
I think the stock market, just the name, the saying, that worries people who aren't hugely financially literate, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That is something... You know, and I would say I know more than some, less than others, but yeah, you know, I'm like the idea of investing in stocks and shares, you know, that's I get the concepts of ISAs and da, 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 but that feels.
But in the end, you're just investing in the economy when you're investing in the stock market. But how do you sort of invest in the economy? It's in practice is investing in the companies that will make the economy. So when you're investing in the stock market, you're buying shares into these companies, and hopefully, you know, these companies will grow. And when you invest, you almost don't need to watch the news, you know, what's happening on the stock market and stuff. I mean, how do I do invest is regularly every month, a portion of my paycheck goes directly into my pension. It could go also into a stocks and share ISA, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you remove like the, you know, no decision process. It's like it's automatic. You don't think about it. And, you know, if the market is not doing so well, it's going to be cheaper. So, you know, good for you. And then hopefully, you know, it's going to go up. Though. But you really want to invest for the long term. You don't want to be this trader. And that's the image we portray of an investor.
That's the point, isn't it? You're not. Yeah. This is not a trader. This is not.
It's not the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
but that's all the movies we've
it's
watched
a long-term
about investing.
Game. And actually, you were saying, Claire, before we started that, actually, you have different sort of pre-bundled, what would you call them?
Funds. They're called ready-made investment funds. Ready-made
investment
we offer
funds.
Them at Barclays, but other investment providers offer them too. And they can be a really good place to start if you're not that confident or comfortable.
Because it's a spread. Because it's, you're not investing. That's the point. When you say you're investing in companies on the stock market, you're not picking one. You're not picking
you shouldn't.
Apple
but a lot you
of
shouldn't.
Or Tesla and go, yeah.
But a lot of people do, you see. And that's the thing. So a lot of people, when they get started, because they're not too sure about what they're doing, they will often buy shares in a single company because they sort of understand, you know, if they're buying a share in a company, they're buying, hoping that they own a small portion of that company. And if the share price goes up, they make money. But of course, if the share price goes down, that's when you're at risk, you know, you could lose money. And if you pick the wrong company, you know, some companies could go bust. So the key with investing is spreading your money and it's diversification. It's the sort of, it's the word that we talk about, you know, again and again and again, diversify, spread your money out, invest in different types of companies, invest in different countries in the world. And to do it by picking individual shares or bonds to invest in can be time consuming, but actually you don't have to do that. So actually,
and that's really for probably a more seasoned investor,
yes,
right? Who, yeah.
But a lot of people think that's the only way to do it,
yes,
and it puts people off. But actually, it's not the only way. And a simpler way is to invest in a fund, and a fund like a ready-made investment will do it all for you. So it does invest across the world. And the way ours work is we have five different funds and they all invest in a mixture of companies and shares and bonds across the world to give you that important diversification. But the risk level that they're taking is slightly different. So, and that's to do with what they invest in and the proportion of the
holdings. And your
holdings.
Individual appetite, whether yes. you want to go a bit riskier or you're going to go and go for the really safe one.
Yeah. So that's the decision you make. You decide which of the five feels most suitable for you.
And will one say, right, your money's locked up for longer, but it's less risky, or does it not work like that?
I think a common misconception, and Emily, I don't know if you'd agree with this, is that people think that when you invest, your money is tied up. And that's because we talk about investing for the long term. And it is important to think of it for the long term because stock markets go up and down. So the longer you've got you're invested for, you can ride out those ups and downs of the sure. market. So if you just invest for a year or two and the market falls, you might need to get your money at a time when the markets have fallen, and then you'll get back less than you originally put in. So that's why we talk about the long term. But your money isn't locked away. You know, if you do need it, you can get at it, and you can sell your investments and take the cash back. So it's not physically, you know, like some cash savings account where, you know, a fixed rate bond where your money is tied up for 2 years or 3 years or something like that. You can get at it if you need to, but the advice is that you only invest money that you can be putting away, and we suggest it for at least 5 years.
Okay, 5 years. Emily, can I just ask you, where do you find, if you decide, right, you do want to invest in a fund, okay, Barclays has five different funds you can invest in. What are your options if you don't know where to start to find a fund?
So if we sort of go back to the basics, first of all, you have to decide what you're investing for. I think that's usually quite good to have some sort of a plan. Uh-huh. So are you investing for retirement, or are you investing for something medium term? Because if you invest through a pension, the money is going to be available for, you know, when you retire. So private pension, 55 years plus. And most people, who have a job, they're going to have a workplace pension. So they are already an investor. So if you already have a workplace pension, that's maybe the best place to go and check how much money are you saving. Can you increase your contribution? How much is your employer matching? And check how your money is invested. So just looking at that, for me, it's like a good first step. Now, if you want to invest for something more, you know, in 5 years, in 10 years, you can use other products. And when you go on any investment platform, on any, you know, bank who offers like investment services, the first thing you'll have to do is they will ask you, what type of accounts do you want to open? Do you want to open a private pension? Do you want to open a stocks and share ISA? Do you want to open like maybe a lifetime ISA? Or do you want to open a general investment account?
Is there a right time to start investing? Is there a difference, I guess, to take that on a level? Is there a difference between saving and investing? Is there a point where you'd say I'd get to it? It's about habit, isn't it? It's about mindset. But is there a time that you would say, right, that's the kind of criteria for someone to start investing?
I mean, most people should think about investing today. But not necessarily starting, but
now, go. You know, usually, listen to the podcast, then go.
I think usually before you start investing, there's a few sort of prerequisites, and they're going to be, you know, it's very personal, so it will depend, but usually it's better not to have expensive short-term debt. So if you have, you know, a big credit card balance that you're still repaying, that tends to be quite expensive. So the money you spend in interest, you'd better maybe repay that off before you start putting money potentially in the stock market, also because it's more risky. So if you need the money, you know, where are you going to get the money? And also having some savings. So an emergency fund is a good idea. So having some money saved in cash in case you have an emergency. And it could be like a few months of living expenses, depending on, you know, your personal circumstances. If you're a freelancer, you may need maybe a bit more money mm-hmm. on this saving account. If you have a regular job, maybe something slightly smaller. Experts would say 3 to 6 months, but it could be less, it could be more. And having this pot of money would mean that then you can start investing on the side. And if the market completely crashes, at least, you know, something happens, you don't need to sell your investments, but you have this little pot of money. So once for me, once you have this and start thinking about investment, you can start. And you can start on a very small scale. Today, you can invest your spare change, literally your £25 a month. You can invest through, you know, your workplace pension. So there's lots of ways and you don't need to have a lot of money to get started.
Would you agree start with your workplace pension?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are investing in that anyway. It's almost you're already started.
But you have to opt out, don't you?
Yeah, now the auto-enrollment, the rules changed a few years ago. I think just on Emily's point, I think it's absolutely right. It's whether it's building up your cash savings first, because, you know, investing doesn't need replace the need to have cash. But hopefully the reason to invest is that over the long term, the stock market should get you a better return on your money than if you leave it all in cash.
Yeah, your money's gonna work harder.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah. It's still cash. Still is very important because, as Emily said, you want it there for your emergency rainy day fund, also for your short term goals. So anything we'd say less than 5 years away, just because of the risk of investing in the stock markets. But then once you've got your cash, and as Emily said, you don't have expensive credit cards or loans if you've paid that off, then that's the time to consider investing. And thinking about then it's how much risk you're comfortable with taking, and then that can help inform you as to where and how you invest your money.
I know we've touched on housing already, but it's a big one, and one of the really questions we had in I want to buy a house, what should my investing plan look like and how can it help? What would you say to that?
Well, I think
it's the kind of first big thing.
Yeah, well, I'd suggest that whilst we can't give advice, and it's important to stipulate that, it's this 5-year rule, really. So it depends how long you think it's going to take you to save up for a deposit. And if you're wanting to buy a house in the next few years, then I wouldn't suggest that you put your money in the stock markets to try and sort of build the deposit. You don't want to be losing that. It's just try and get there. But given where house prices are, some people may feel it's going to take them a lot longer to get their deposit accumulated. But your house is your home, and saving that money to get onto the property ladder, often for a lot of people, they'd prefer to keep it in a sort of cash savings account.
Okay. Would you agree, Emily, when it comes to buying a house?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a personal decision. There's this, you know, still dream of ownership, but it's actually quite tricky, you know, for most people to start this journey.
You probably feel quite different to us. You're French and it's just such a British thing, isn't it?
I think it's the same in France. Like, people want their home, and I think it's, you know, it makes economic sense to own your home, you know, depending on, you know, interest rates and the cost of mortgages and stuff. But if you can't buy a home now, what else can you do? Because there's no point, you know, waiting and trying to save. So if you know you won't need the money, you know, for the next 5 years or so, can you do something else with your with your money instead of just, you know, saving it on a saving account at like 0%?
Yeah, we're not saying spunk it. We're just saying, there are other ways to skin a cat, as my husband would say. There's obviously Vestpod, but can we talk about, and there's the financial press. I know you're big on education. You have your podcast. How do you learn? Is it just taking an interest? Is it immersing yourself? Are there any other specific ways you would suggest people learn more about this world?
Well, I think the beauty nowadays is, if I think back to when I started out in journalism, which was over 20 years ago now, giving a slight idea of my age, that it really was almost the money pages of the national newspapers where you'd go, or some of the sort of more specialist magazines and things that you'd go to find the information. But the beauty of the sort of the internet and social media and things like that is that there's a lot of places now that have got that cover the topic of investing, and women's magazines and women's titles and stuff. It's bringing it out of the financial pages, which actually can put people off because they think, oh, it's really dry and boring.
I love that we're talking about it more. I find it really exciting that our readers are so,
you know, and people like Emily, you know, on social media, on Instagram and things like that. The only caveat I would is be careful about who you're trusting, because, you know, especially with investing, there is risk involved with it, right? And you can never totally eradicate it. So there are ways to reduce it, but you need to really sort of I suppose, be getting your information from a trusted source. And that would be my sort of main thing is there's lots out there and it's brilliant. And there's lots of events and workshops and sort of interesting ways to learn about your finances. But just sort of look at, just look at who's talking about it and make sure that they've, you know, they've got the experience and knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And finance, I mean, personal finance is so personal. So, you know, don't compare your journey to someone else. Maybe someone else is doing a choice that, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, doing yourself or investing in something.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's, you know, super risky. We've seen recently a lot of people investing in cryptocurrencies, you know, very risky alternative assets. But before,
crypto, I mean, just blows my mind.
Yeah. But, you know, why not? I mean, if you have a balanced portfolio, you have your pension, you have your home, you know, you can look at this type of assets, but you should know that, you know, you should be ready to lose all your money potentially. But, you know, I'm interested in...
Because we don't really know what
I'm interested in blockchain. I'm interested in the technology. I'm interested in crypto. I've been, you know, educating myself for the past year. So I know what I'm more or less what I'm doing when I'm investing there. It's not just I received a WhatsApp from a friend who's telling me, you know, you've seen this latest, you know, coin and you should buy that.
Can I please have a dummy's guide to blockchain? Because like my little brain can't.
And I think the other thing is that if you do something like investing in crypto, as I'm sure, you know, it's a small portion of
spread. Diversify, as you said.
And what you can afford to lose, because you've seen the crypto market now. I mean, it's lost, you know, people have lost a lot of money. Yeah. So
and
what are you
able to cope with
the stress.
The ride and the stress.
But I would say,
lots of people, it's not... They won't feel comfortable with it. I don't.
I imagine women are a lot more.
Yeah, but I think often is, you know, people want to make a quick win with their finances. They want to make a quick gain. They're like, what if, you know, what if I could just double my money? What if? And it's tempting. And that's something you see on social media sometimes. You see these people who are super successful and made a lot of money by trading this sort of thing. So this is a massive red flag. So it's always going back to how do they make the money? What are their credentials? What
and
is their background?
If it's got that far, it's probably too late, isn't it? Because they probably got in so early.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, when you're on, you know, social a lot of hours during the day and checking things, you're like, you get into this thing, this rabbit hole of trying to see what can I do? What are the shortcuts? So for me, it's almost like, you know, going back to basics, maybe reading a book about money, you know, watching, like doing a course, you know, starting to have this conversation, but really thinking it's long term. No one is pushing me to do it now. I can take my time. We say, you know, you can start investing today. That's true. But just consider the different options. Maybe talk to a professional if you can.
Yeah.
And if you can't, try to, you know, to speak to a few people around you and have a sensible conversation.
Can you come to that professional? Because I've got a question. But side note, did you ever read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
I mean, I'm not a big fan. I think these are a bit like old school principles.
Is it? I remember reading it when I was about 22. Sadly, I don't think it's around anymore.
But there's some good principles, I think, for women. And I think this aspect around, you know, sustainability, sustainable finances, understanding, you know,
what does that mean, sustainable finances?
So it's like looking at how, for example, you spend your money. I mean, when do we sit down and look at, you know, our accounts or looking at, you know, the purchases we make? Are they making us happy? Do we have, you know, are they aligned with our values? I mean, these these are things, you know, trying to save a bit more money every month. And then where do we invest? So trying to find the motivation to actually look into our finances, because they're a lot more than just numbers. It comes from, you know, your mindset. Maybe you're spending a lot of money because you're feeling bad or you're feeling stressed. And then you're going to feel the shame because you've been impulse spending. So trying to really, you know, take a step back, look at the big pictures. Why are you taking this decision? And can you improve just, you know, one thing or build a new habit around money? And investing will come, you know, and it's going to be part of it, but you can't solve everything at the same time. And I think a lot of it is around behaviors. And people are saying, you know, money management is 80% mindset and maybe 20% more practical stuff. And I really believe this.
Yeah, when you say it, it feels really empowering. No, I get it. I actually had a friend around last night and I lent her some clothes and she was like, oh, I feel really bad. I was like, I love this. Like this is what we should be doing. This is, you're not shopping. I'm getting more value. This is way more sustainable. Like it's so, okay, that's my new thing, lending, I think.
Lending, buying secondhand, you know, selling stuff you don't need.
I think we are changing. Your mindset is changing.
It's changing, but you still have these like impulses, and it's also not judging yourself and others, you know, because you're making these decisions. It's okay, you know, be a bit more gentle. I think we're really hard with ourselves when it comes to money. We're like, I'm bad with finances. I don't know how to do that. That's okay. Like, you never learn. So just, you know, start with the simple things.
And I think also normalizing, you know, some of the conversation we've had today, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street, a lot of the connotations and when you think about investing and crypto, it feels quite sort of an adrenaline rush, very high risk.
Impulsive.
That you've got to be on it all the time watching. Actually, it shouldn't. And in some ways, a sort of, I remember somebody saying to me, a good investment strategy should be boring. Because really, it's there.
Yeah, my husband loves a spreadsheet. I'm like, whoa, that is hot. I mean, get a few more of those out.
But it is. It's just that you don't need to be looking at it every day. You do, you know, it's almost understanding the roles of the different pots of money that you have. So, you know, you've got your cash savings there for, you know, your spending, your socializing, your holidays, your emergency rainy day funds, and Christmas and stuff like that. And then that sort of, if you've got anything left to put away for your future, for your financial future, and everybody's goals will be different. You know, your family's future. It's sort of, it doesn't need to be, you don't want it to be exciting almost. You just want it to be there in the background, knowing that you've got it there and it's growing and growing.
But
and
I think people who don't invest or save regularly would be surprised how empowering and excited you can get about it quite quickly when you do start.
And over the last few years, over lockdown, Emily touched on it earlier, for a lot of people, it's been a very uncertain time. It continues to be so. But when we were
And it is, to be fair, a particularly hard time at the moment with the cost of living, isn't it?
Yeah, so. And I think, you know, it's important to recognise that. But for those who have got money and when we were in lockdown, you know, not travelling into work, not commuting, not going on holiday, not able to socialise, people had money left at the end of the month. And we saw an increase. We saw it at Barclays and it was, other investment services reported the same, an increase in the number of people investing for the first time. And we did some research at the back end of last year as things were opening up, just to ask people, were they planning to continue? Because obviously, you know, expenditure will be rising again. But the good news is that, a bit like you, people had seen, it feels good when you can see that
good
money accumulating.
And so they're in it now.
Yeah, even if they can't afford to be putting as much away each month, they're not planning on
stopping.
They've
started the habit and it is just that simple. You mentioned, Emily, financial advisors. Now, they come in all different guises, don't they? But we did have a question about whether you should have a financial advisor. How do you know whether they're a good one? What can they do for you? You know, there are some cowboys, aren't there? How do you know that you're dealing with the right one? Where do you look? What are there certain qualifications you're looking for?
It can be quite tricky maybe to find a financial advisor. So what I would say is maybe personal recommendation from friends, from family, and maybe start to write this list of 3 to 5 different financial advisor, and then of course looking them up, looking at their qualifications, calling them. You know, you can call them and have this first meeting with, you know, usually get to know each other, understanding the services of the advisor, what's going to be the relationship. And it's almost come prepared with like a list of questions you can ask this advisor. how are you going to help me? How much does it cost? What type of reports I'm going to receive? Are you going to be my point of contact? So really trying to understand, you know, what are you going to get from this this relationship? Now, if you're very early on in your career, it may not be that you need a financial advisor because that can be quite expensive. So there's maybe a lot of things you can start on your own, especially with all the platforms and getting organized with your finances.
Surely with some of the platforms, I mean, if you go straight to a good platform or to a bank like you, do you need a financial advisor or is it...
So the market's changed a lot over the last sort of 10 years or so because the rules changed around how you pay for financial advice, and what that did is it used to often be a commission-based service, so people wouldn't pay something up front, whereas now you have to pay an upfront, you know, a fee to the advisor. And what's happened is it's meant that the number of financial advisors has sort of reduced, and also, as Emily pointed out, because of the cost of getting that advice, if you haven't got a huge amount of money, and by huge, you know, it's not that you need hundreds and hundreds of thousands, but for some people it can feel expensive. But what we've seen, and you might have heard of things like robo-advice, is a common way where you do sort of online questionnaires, and we offer a service at Barclays called Plan and Invest for our current account customers, that it's a sort of, you complete a questionnaire, they're asking you, you know,
and then they match you like a skincare quiz, or
and yes, so we try to look at what you want to invest for, what are your goals, trying to understand your attitude to risk, and then we create an investment plan for you. And there are similar, you know, there are other services like that. So there are ways to get sort of digital help online without having to pay for sort of face-to-face advice.
That, presumably that's what you do with Vestpod as well. I mean, presumably you're giving...
We're not giving advice. Okay. We're doing education and guidance. So to give advice, you have to be regulated, and that's going to be very specific to your personal circumstances. So the advisors will build a plan for you depending on how much you earn, what is the type, your financial goals and stuff like that. And there's also a new category of, you know, help that you can get if you're more struggling around money mindset, you have some blocks around money, you've seen a lot of maybe money coaching in the space, and you can book like an hour, you can book like 10 sessions. So again, look at the credentials, because it's unregulated versus financial advice that is regulated. Okay. But if you need more of a boost around your finances, accountability and stuff like that, yeah, it's, for me, it's like courses, accountability, maybe events, and potentially like money coaching.
But I think also it's worth pointing out that, you know, a lot of the education that we've touched upon, you know, and they, that's out there, and it's designed to help empower people so that they don't necessarily need the advice, and that they can do it themselves. Some will be comfortable to do it themselves totally and choose their own investments or go for a ready-made investment fund. If you need a little bit more help, the sort of the digital services like the one I mentioned, Plan and Invest at Barclays and things like that, that manage it, make the decisions for you on your behalf if you decide to go on and invest. So there are lots of different options out there. And I think that's the point that Emily was trying to make. It's worth investing some time to understand the basics, because you might feel that actually you don't need to speak to a qualified financial advisor, because there's enough support there to help you get started yourself.
Well, you'd hope so in this day and age.
And I think it's getting started. So if you're not sure, you've been comparing a few different platforms, you don't know which one to use, it's okay. Like, just get started. Make sure it's, you know, a regulated platform. It's regulated by the FCA. You start investing with this platform.
Ultimately, if it's regulated.
Yeah. You know, if your money is protected by the FSCS, you just need to check that, you know, the stamps are here, then you can always move your money, you can transfer your pot, so it's not like withdrawing all the money, but you can ask them to transfer your investment from one platform to another.
You can do that,
you can do that.
So if I was with a platform and I decided, right, I want to be with another platform, I want to move to Barclays, for example, I can move that money across, they will move it like you port a phone number or you were...
And it depends. Sometimes if the platform you're moving to doesn't offer the investment that you've got your money in at the moment, it might have to be sold, converted into cash, and then reinvest it. If you've got an investment fund that's available on platform A and platform A, it just moves across.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Well, I have to say, as a woman, I can see why category disruptors might make a woman feel nervous. Like, I can see why a more traditional retail, bank, like Barclays. You know, I can see the appeal of that, like, heritage brand and that kind of trust feeling. Maybe there's a bit more comfort in that. You've got that presence and you've been around a long time and you're trustworthy and you're not some new fintech that's going to go under or whatever. I mean, as I say, you're looking for certifications, aren't you, from other platforms? But I feel like there's something comforting in
and I think the old school values and heritage. Through research that comes through as often sort of trust in a brand is an important factor for a lot of people. But it's not for everyone. And I think that, you know, some people don't care so much about that. And there's other things that they want. It's you know, what can the app do? And I think the key thing is, to Emily's point, is there's lots of choice out there. Have a look, see what's there. And just if you feel it's the right time for you to invest, then there's lots of
choice. And there is a lot out there. I think if you're a cautious woman, I can see particularly why someone like you would appeal. Talking about platforms, a Barclays or whatever, what do you need to start? I mean, I get that no amount is too little, you know, it's never too early to start saving, to start the habits. But at what point do you go to a bank, a platform? Is there a minimum amount you kind of need to aim for to start with?
So there's no minimum amount to get invested. It will depend on some of the platforms. So you need to check, you know, what is the minimum amount depending on, you know, what type of accounts. Mm-hmm. But as I said, in the market, you will have some apps that will just invest your spare change. You will have apps or, you know, platforms or banks that will let you invest like a regular amount every month. That can be £25, £50, £100. So literally, there's almost like technically no minimum to get started investing, but it's more for you trying to go back to your budget and try to see, okay, how much am I ready to, you know, put away every month for the long term? That's not going to be like a cash savings. But technically, you know, you can do it with a very small amount of money.
So could you ring up Barclays and say, I want to invest £100 a week?
You can. The only thing I'd sort of caveat is when you start, if you're only investing small amounts, it's important to check what the fees are and the costs involved, because there are costs involved. Okay. And so sometimes if it's only a small amount that you're investing, the fee can offset any potential sort of gain. So look at things like that. But I think the other thing to remember is, you know, this is all flexible. So it can be, it's a really good practice to get into, to sort of do as Emily does, set up that regular direct debit. So there's money being invested every month. But also, you know, say you get a bonus at work or some inheritance and you've got a lump sum, you could put that in, or you might get that and that could help get you started. And then you decide to sort of put some money away each month. And you can also change the amount that you invest. So even if you start off putting away £200 a month, but suddenly something happens in life, maybe you have a baby and life gets a bit more expensive, you can dial it down or dial it up. And so that's the other important thing. What you start on day one doesn't have to be what you continue doing forever.
Okay. I want to get through a few more reader questions before we run out of time. Someone has said, is there a typical ROI in percentage terms you might look for on an investment product, or is there no such thing?
No, because nothing's guaranteed, because you don't know what's going to happen with the stock markets in the future. I mean, what you're hoping to do is you're hoping to earn a higher return than you would get if you leave your money in a cash savings account. Mm-hmm. But a lot will depend. You know, one of the reasons some people are happy to take more risk is, you know, in theory, the higher risk you take, the higher the return you will be, but it will be a lot, you know, a hairier ride along the way. So if you're going lower risk, you'll have to, you know, be prepared that the less risk that you take, the lower the annual return is likely to be. But it just can never be guaranteed because stock markets, you know, they can go down as well as up.
Someone has said there's a lot of volatility in the market right now. Does that make it a good or bad time to invest, Emily?
So it's a question like people often ask, is like, is it a good time to start investing? And there's no good time to start investing. I mean, what we often say, it is better to spend time in the market, so actually being invested, than trying to time the market. And timing the market means, you know, trying to buy when the prices are low and sell then when they're high to make a profit. So I think the best way for most people, that also removes, you know, most of the stress, is to invest on a regular basis. So can you invest, you know, monthly and then you will invest at, you know, any point in the stock market. And of course, there's a lot of volatility and that will put a lot of investors off and you'll be like, oh my God, I'm going to lose all my money. You don't know. Is it the bottom of the market today? Will it go up or will it crash? But when you look historically at, you know, stock market performance, you will see massive drawdowns in the stock market every 10 years or so. And the markets usually recover from this, but you need to leave time for your money to recover. And that's why we usually say don't invest for less than 5 to 10 years, because 5 years is going to be, I mean, historically, it has been the time for markets to recover. Okay. Of course, you know, this past performance is not going to be an indication for future performance, but it's almost trying not to look at the market. And if you have an investment app and if you're a new investor, I mean, I'm not going to check my investments every day, right?
Yeah.
Because you're, it's automated. I know it goes there.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, qualified. I don't read enough. It's some people's job to actually look at the market and be there 24/7. It's not your job. You have a full-time job. Yeah, you're doing other things. You have a family. So just automate as much as you can. And because you invest in a, you know, diversified way and for the long term, that's, you know, the best thing you can do for investment and time. Time is the secret, because it will help your money compound and
that's,
you will
really
be able to recover
from
this.
Yeah, that's
time
really,
and diversification.
That's really what I'm getting from you today. We're nearly at the end.
Yeah.
I've got one question I want to ask you. But one thing I really feel, and I'm sure you would agree with, is that, you know, we need to be more inclusive. We need to talk about money. We need to change the conversation, the language about money. Would you agree with that? I mean, you obviously do because you've set up Vestpod and written your book. And
I think it is. And I think certainly when it comes to investing, we know from, there's a lot of research actually, that one of the things that can put people off is the sort of the technical terms and the language and the jargon.
Yes.
I think what the key is trying to explain and talk about investing in everyday conversational language, because a lot of the time when you are reading and you see some of the acronyms and things like that, you're like, oh, I haven't got a clue what that means.
Yes.
Or it can be quite scary and off-putting. But actually, when you break it down and you just explain it in normal, everyday, you know, make it conversational, actually it's feels far more accessible.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things, particularly perhaps, that can put a lot of women off, is they just don't feel investing's right for them.
Pitched at them, because it's in this really
pitched at them.
Dry, serious corporate.
But it's,
I think it's pitched a lot to women at the moment.
Good. But well, then it's changing, isn't it?
Just to give an example, so I worked in finance, I worked for Lehman. My job was to be an investor in private equity, but actually I didn't have a pension and I wasn't like taking care of my finances. I met an advisor, was like,
you're like the web builder with no website.
And then I thought, okay, I mean, a lot of what we learn from money, it's, you know, comes from, you know, financial institutions and the market and stuff, but actually money is like super personal. It's a tool, it's a day-to-day tool, so we have to, you know, own this thing and completely change the conversation. And that's why at Vestpod we've been doing events and we launch our money meetups and stuff, because there's a lot of stuff you can learn, but it's also you sharing, I think, sharing personal stories, sharing experiences. Yeah. And this is really empowering, because we feel we are on our own. We are the only one with credit card debt. We are the only one who can't save, can't invest. But you realize, like, it's the same. It's going to be hard for a lot of people. So having, listening to stories, conversation, the communication, like podcasts like this, I think are really, really helpful, because it's a lot about building confidence in investing, in managing finances, and then understanding the tool. And it's never going to be a rocket science to, you know, start organizing your money, but it's more the motivation to take the time to actually do it regularly over the long term. It's not something you're going to learn in, you know, watching a 1 minute video, but it's more every week, every month, and it compounds. It's like investing, so it's like little efforts every week, and maybe, you know, having money dates for your finances, and it can be on your own with a partner, with a friend, and really changing the conversation about money, because there shouldn't be any shame to talk about
that. I agree. I always say to my children, it doesn't make you happy, but it is, it's one of the most powerful things in the world, and it's part of our everyday life, and so important that, I mean, back to where we started, and education and talking about it and having these conversations on Share Luxe. Claire, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, just a final message is don't be scared of investing, because I think it's just part of your overall sort of part of your financial plan. It's the bit that can help you reach those longer term goals. So there's lots of help out there. Just take a bit of time. Hopefully you've learned a bit today. And if you feel comfortable and it's the right time for you to get started, you know, the key is 5 years or more, really, have that in your mind and invest in longer term. But it's not too late. So have a look and see if it's right for you.
That's comforting. Emily, what would you say?
And I completely agree with that. And the other thing is be patient, because you're not going to see the results of your investment in a month, in a year, in 2 years, but really, you know, 20 years, you know, 10 years, 20 years, it will compound. And that's really what you want. So just take it as, you know, a long-term strategy, and that should make your life a bit easier.
Thank you both so much for your time and insights. What a great conversation to have. I genuinely feel these are the conversations we should be having. I'm sure that was clear. Anyway, just a reminder that this podcast is in partnership with Barclays as part of the Sherlux and Barclays partnership to help modern women understand more about their money and investing, whatever their age and stage in life. Investing can be the wise way to make your money work harder for your future. But so many of us don't know where to go or where to begin. Barclays are here to make it easy. Search Barclays ready-made investments to see if they have an investment match for you. And we must just add the disclaimer that investing is not for everyone. With investing, your capital is at risk and the value can fall as well as rise.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.